Hello and welcome to A History of the United States, episode 104, Pitt Takes Power. In our last episode, we covered the events that took place in London during 1755 and early 1756. Newcastle, in order to shore up the support for his ministry in the House of Commons, formed an alliance with Henry Fox and brought him into the government. Meanwhile, events were transpiring in Europe. Hanover needed to be protected from French and Prussian attacks now that Austria and the Dutch couldn't be relied on. After flirting with Russia, Britain and Prussia signed the Convention of Westminster. They both would unite if a force threatened Germany, a vague term that included Hanover, but Prussia would not need to join in a colonial war between Britain and France. This allowed Austria and France, who had been sounding out an alliance in secret for a while, to come out in the open. In May 1756, the Convention of Versailles was signed. A very similar agreement in which France pledged to come to the aid of Austria if Austria were attacked, but Austria didn't need to join in a colonial conflict between Britain and France. In London and Paris, both sides believed they had securely localised the conflict to North America, whenever war was formally declared. Newcastle was quite pleased. What I want to do in this episode is explore how, in the course of 7 months, the situation completely fell apart. By December 1756, Newcastle's government would fall. Pitt would return to the ministry. Britain, Prussia, France, Austria, Spain, Sweden, and Russia would be engaged in a European war, and conflict would break out in India. For this, we're going to stay out of North America. We'll return there next week. So, how did it all go wrong? We must begin with the Convention of Westminster. Once the British and French were convinced that war would not involve Hanover, the centre of the conflict shifted westward. France considered it a priority to try and match the forces of the Royal Navy, and so began to build up its fleets in two locations, the Channel ports, and in the Mediterranean at Toulon. The Toulon force was arguably the more dangerous, being able to attack British possessions in the Mediterranean. The naval base at Menorca was the most obvious target, while the Channel ports threatened the British Isles directly. Newcastle brought soldiers from Hanover and Hesse to Britain to try and help. The British forces were already quite stretched, but this gave further ammunition to Pitt, who heaped scorn upon Newcastle and Fox. This was the last thing the government needed. Newcastle had brought Fox into the cabinet and made him leader of the House of Commons to secure his own position there. He was unable to do it himself, being a member of the House of Lords. Fox was able to manage this effectively, but Fox found himself thoroughly disenchanted with Newcastle. He did not consider Newcastle worthy to lead the country, being of too limited ability. Newcastle, meanwhile, disliked Fox, viewing his excessive ambition with disgust. The cabinet began to splinter into multiple factions at the worst possible time. In May 1756, the force gathering at Toulon struck and attacked Menorca. Newcastle had no option but to declare war on France. Admiral John Byng, who had recently been appointed to travel to Gibraltar, and who, while a well-connected administrator, was not a fighting man, travelled immediately to Menorca. Newcastle was worried. Realising what would happen if Menorca fell, he started to ask Fox if anyone in the government could be made a scapegoat. Byng's rescue mission was a disaster. Undermanned and under-equipped, he could do nothing against the French fleet. There was a 4-hour indecisive battle in which his ships were damaged, and he decided to return to Gibraltar to repair his ships, rather than taking the more advisable course of reinforcing Minorca and waiting for reinforcements that would arrive in a few days' time. He doomed the garrison, which finally surrendered on the 28th of June. News reached London, and, fearing that Newcastle would make him the scapegoat, Fox immediately blamed Newcastle for sending Byng out with too few ships. Newcastle blamed Byng and had him executed. This did little but convince the British MPs that Newcastle was not fit for leadership. The political crisis developed and worsened over the summer, until word arrived on August 30th from King Frederick II of Prussia that he had just invaded Saxony, sparking a war with Austria. Ever since the close of the War of the Austrian Succession, Frederick had been expecting war with Austria. He had taken Silesia and knew that Empress Maria Theresa wanted it back desperately. Austria had been using the interbellum to prepare for a new conflict, and Frederick thought his best option was to preemptively strike Saxony, which was allied to Austria. He could then use Saxon treasure in his war effort. Meanwhile, he would move south into Bohemia and Moravia, from which he could advance on Vienna. It seemed simple enough. The war would be over by Christmas. Frederick led the force that marched into Saxony in late August, catching the Austrians and Saxons completely off guard. After winning the Battle of Lobositz in October, Frederick occupied Saxony and incorporated its army into the Prussian army. He had achieved one of his main objectives, but it had not been anywhere near as easy as he had expected. On the contrary, the Austrians seemed actually capable. They had even managed to partly occupy Silesia. The international order was shocked and widely condemned Prussian unprovoked aggression. Britain started to organise the German states to protect Hanover and started sending supplies and money to Prussia, but the other states were rather hostile. The Dutch refused to join the alliance at Britain's request, but they were not actively hostile. Russia, which had been outraged at Britain's treachery in the Convention of Westminster, sided with Austria and France. Prussia was viewed as the greatest threat by Russia, who were thoroughly alarmed by their aggression and feared what they might intend to do for Polish West Prussia. Spain was allied with France and so joined on their side. Sweden also joined the war, albeit in 1757. Allied against Prussia, as they had their eyes on Pomerania. So, on the one side were Britain, Prussia, and the smaller German states, and on the other were France, Austria, Russia, Spain, and Sweden. With war now formalised, conflict began to break out across the world. To make things a bit simpler, the Seven Years' War can be broken down into four smaller conflicts. The French and Indian War in North America. The Pomeranian War in Northern Germany. The Third Silesian War between Prussia and Austria. And the Third Carnatic War in India. India is going to be of least importance to our story, but it would be remiss of me to ignore it altogether. I wouldn't want to leave anyone unoffended by not horrifically pronouncing yet more names. So, we'll have a brief overview of just what was going on, and remember that we're just scratching the surface here. The origins of the Carnatic Wars lay in the death of the Mughal Emperor Aurangzeb in 1707. The Mughals were descendants of the Mongols and Timurids, who invaded India in the 16th century. They ruled for nearly two centuries by establishing a centralised administrative framework across the Indian subcontinent, reaching its zenith during the reign of Aurangzeb. John Richards, in The New Cambridge History of India, estimates that at this point, the Mughal Empire had a population of some 150 million people, a quarter of the world's population. Meanwhile, the state was the world's largest economic superpower. From the death of Aurangzeb, the empire began to wane. Historians are not entirely sure why, but some theories are that the empire's finances began to weaken as the Muslim rulers would not work with the Hindu bankers, that the morale of the armies were sapped by conflicts with the Maratha Confederacy, and moral degeneracy caused by excessive luxury. As Mughal power weakened, the British and French began to interfere in Indian politics. They remained mostly friendly, until at some point during the War of the Austrian Succession, when conflict broke out, in which the French captured Madras. One of the key points of Aix-la-Chapelle was that Madras be returned to the British. A pseudo-war lingered on, which only came to a close in 1754, but the outbreak of the Seven Years' War allowed the conflict to resume. That's enough information here for the moment. We'll come back to India in a future episode. Now I want to return to London. To say that the year had been an unmitigated disaster for Newcastle would have been an understatement. It had started with securing his government with the support of Fox and securing Hanover with the Convention of Westminster. Now they were at war with France, Austria, Russia, Spain and Sweden. They had lost Menorca. I won't even go into events in North America, but they were not good. And the relationship between Newcastle and Fox was becoming more strained every day. But Fox waited for his moment. The time when he could do the most damage. He acted on October 13th, resigning from the ministry. With that, Newcastle lost the Commons. Pitt was needed, but he refused to serve in any government which Newcastle was a part of. Newcastle resigned as First Lord of the Treasury on November the 11th, 1756. A new government was formed. I mentioned last time that Pitt disdained day-to-day administration, so he would not sit as Chancellor of the Exchequer, and instead took the position as Secretary of State for the Southern Department. The Lord Treasury would be in the hands of the Duke of Devonshire, but he was only a figurehead. To all intents and purposes, Pitt was now in control. But we'll save all that for the future. Join me in our next episode when we'll go back to North America to catch up on just what was going wrong there for the British in 1756. Thanks for listening, I'll see you then.